I'm your host, Laurie Handler, and you've tuned in to Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment, and I greet you in peace. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Did you ever wonder what your life would be like if you lived it fully, full out, allowing the rich juiciness of who you truly are to ooze, to ripple, to burst forth in all its glory? Are you in a delicious place in your life, living in technicolor, or do your days feel like a series of one mundane experience after another? Are you even aware that you deserve pleasure? Well, my guest today, Edie Weinstein, she is an expert who knows something about this. She's an expert at living an organic life. Edie's a Renaissance woman and calls herself a bliss mistress. She delights in inviting people to live rich, full lives. She's also a journalist. She's an interviewer and an author. She's a dynamic and inspiring speaker. And she's also a licensed social worker and interfaith minister. Edie and I met years ago through various circles, and I've had her on the show before talking about something called Cuddle Party. But mostly today, I want to find out about how you can live an orgasmic life and if it even appeals to you. So, Edie, first of all, hi and welcome to Tantra Cafe.
Hi, thank you, Laurie. I'm thrilled to be here tonight.
Great, great.
This is very exciting.
First of all, what I want to know is, what does it mean to be a bliss mistress? Because bliss connotes a state of joy and mistress connotes a state of domination. So are you, to me, so are you dominating people with bliss? What are you doing?
No. First of all, where it came from, how bliss mistress got born. I teach a workshop called BYOB, which is Be Your Own Bliss, based on the ideas that Joseph Campbell put forth. If you remember, you know, the teacher, philosopher, Joseph Campbell talked about the idea of following your bliss. And I like that idea. And I also know that bliss is portable, that if we can be our own bliss, then we don't need to get it from anybody else or anywhere else. So that's where the BYOB came from, Be Your Own Bliss. So a couple years ago, I was teaching the class at a retreat. I walked into the class, and one of the women there said, "Oh, you're the bliss master." And I said, "Oh, yeah, that's an interesting concept." And when I went home, I was talking to a dear friend, and he said, "Oh, no, bliss mistress." And it had a sense of intrigue. I don't believe in dominating anybody. I believe we have free will. So we can choose bliss, or we can
thank you for saying, but it just, you know, when people talk about mistress, like all of a sudden I have this image of BDSM and somebody in leather going, you know, you will have bliss.
You will have the bliss. I've never tried that, but that's interesting. But no, that's not, you know, that's not my, I don't play like that. But my idea is that bliss is so inviting that I think who wouldn't want it? And yet, there are people in the world that would rather live their comfortable, safe lives than risk stretching into something beyond what they're accustomed to. So
Absolutely. That's
where Bliss Mistress came from. Now, this same friend challenges me because he says, if you're going to be teaching this stuff, you better be living it. So every day I set an intention to live my bliss fully. Now, it doesn't have to mean, you know, being high energy and on fire all the time. Bliss can be peaceful. Bliss can be calming, relaxing. So it's about what truly lights me up from the inside is how I live my bliss. What's bliss for you might be different than what's bliss for me.
Yes, so, very, very, very well put. Very, very well put. So let's talk a little bit about that. Like how would I know, how could I find out my bliss if I didn't know what my bliss is? If somebody called you up and said, "Okay, great, bliss mistress, what do I do?"
Well, the first thing, and you would appreciate this, that I would encourage people to do is breathe. because where okay. there's breath, there's life. I can say that I went to the bliss level
bliss
butterfly
course.
Training. So I'm surprised you. I mean, obviously confidentiality wouldn't allow you to say that, but I can say that I went to your bliss training, and one of the biggest things that I got from it was the importance of breathing, because if I'm not breathing, I'm not fully living. So I encourage people to take a breath and center themselves and say, okay, where am I now in my life? And if I'm where I'm content, great. And if I'm not content, what do I want to do about it? So from that place of calmness and centeredness and groundedness, I would ask them, take a moment to remember when you were fully alive. Where were you? What were you doing? Maybe who were you with? Or maybe you were by yourself. And then embody that feeling, not just think about it, but feel it everywhere in your body, because we are full sensory beings. And when we enter into life, senses fully alive, we get more out of it. So I would have them embody, at least in their imagination, what it was to feel that bliss. And then the next step might be, okay, come out of it, come talk to me. What did you feel, see, hear, smell, and taste? And then maybe have them write about it, journal about it.
Sounds fabulous.
So that it's in their words. Yeah.
Beautiful.
And then
So your definition of bliss is what you set your intention for every day, but these people will find out by doing a short and simple exercise with you. It's almost a little meditation. To find out, well, how they felt bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And then I imagine that you expand upon that. You know, they go to a place that they're familiar with, and then if they stay working with you, that you bring them to a place that's kind of unfamiliar.
Right. And some of the work that I do with people as individual, and my work as a licensed social worker, I work in a hospital, I don't go into it in the same way that I would working with a group doing a workshop or presentation. Because I'm constrained by certain rules, policies, whatever on my full-time job. But
licenses,
I rephrase it.
Licenses, legalities, contracts, restrictions.
Yeah, there's some things that I can and can't do at work that I wouldn't be able to, that I would be able to have the freedom to do in my own private work, with groups or with individuals. And I can still, that's the other thing too that I've learned to do is how to bridge the mainstream and the metaphysical. How to translate, how to repurpose, if you want to call it that. The languaging. Because if I'm speaking in a foreign language, they're not going to get it.
Right.
So it's got to be what they understand, what anybody I'm working with understands bliss to be.
Well, help me to understand this, because I led off with talking about having an orgasmic life.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say that bliss equals orgasmic? Having a blissful life equals an orgasmic life?
Well, when I think about an orgasmic life, it's not what we think of only as physiological response to a stimuli. It's, I did a presentation a couple of weeks ago at an interfaith community I'm part of, and when I first told the minister, who's a dear friend, that I was going to talk about, her eyes got wide. I said, it's not what you think. Nobody's going to get naked here, at least not physically.
Okay. Right.
So she felt a little reassured by that. But the idea is that in order to live an orgasmic life, I find that it's important to be emotionally naked. To be able to say, to strip off the layers of conditioned response to life. To strip off the layers of fear and say, okay, I'm going to open my heart to offer and receive love and abundance fully and completely. That to me is living an orgasmic life. Being open to engaging with the beloved, with a capital B, in all forms, for me, is living an orgasmic life. For you, again, it might be something totally different. I don't have the right to tell anybody what to believe spiritually. I don't have the right to tell anybody what their pleasure is.
Right.
So, that's a part of it too, is having people discover.
I appreciate your respect for the different palates and appetites and desires that people could have, because so many people feel they're just breaking out of a box Mm-hmm. And they feel so constrained and suppressed by who they feel they should be.
Right.
So what you're talking about, I think, is really having people, like, it's like a discovery process.
Oh, it is. Discovery and uncovering. And it's just as true for me as anybody I might work with. My husband, when he was alive, I'm widowed 11 years now, what my husband used to say is that I was always looking over my shoulder to see what the propriety police might be thinking.
I'm really glad you're over that, Edie.
I can't say I'm totally over it, but I'm in process. I'm a work in progress, like all of us.
Yes.
And I'm learning that I have to live with me 24/7 for the rest of my life. I can't live somebody else's dream for me or somebody else's belief about how I should be. As a recovering codependent, that's true too. So I come to this work not just from book knowledge, but from knowing what it's like to be that, I don't know if constrained is the right word, but that self-limiting at various points in my life.
Yeah.
So it's a process. I'm dipping my toes into the waters. I'm much farther into the waters than I was a year ago or 10 years ago. So I'm, breaking.
Can you just describe to us what is a codependent? Because I'm not assuming that everybody knows.
Sure.
Although I've read Pia Melody and other books on codependence, I don't know what the actual definition is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a recovery term. It first got its heyday, whatever, in the 70s, 80s, with, the drug and alcohol recovery movement. A codependent was usually considered somebody that enabled the addict or alcoholic to continue their addiction. What it's come to mean now is any relationship that's enmeshed where you don't know where someone else starts and you stop. And that's something that I learned. I was a good little caregiver growing up and I had a very loving, nurturing, supportive family. But I was so afraid of losing love and approval, although there was no reason to think that I would, that I became everybody's sweetheart. I had a hard time saying no. I had a hard time setting appropriate boundaries in relationships. So a healthy relationship has fluidity to it, where there are two individuals coming together by choice. An enmeshed codependent relationship could look like, have you ever seen those finger puzzle things that you put your fingers in and one person pulls and tugs and the other person pulls and tugs, and the only way to get your finger out is to compress your fingers, bring them together, and then loosen them.
Right.
That to me is the essence of moving from a codependent relationship to a healthy, open, fluid kind of relationship.
Nice visual.
I'm sorry, say it again.
That's a nice visual, being able to...
Yeah, I use that in my practice when I work with people, when I teach that concept. And I spent 6 years going to Codependence Anonymous meetings, CODA meetings, to learn those things.
Mm.
And this ties in with your show, too. Some of the concepts, one of them jumped out at me, too, is tenets of Codependence Anonymous. We accepted sex when we wanted love. How many of your listeners, how many of the people you've worked with live that way? I'm going to say yes to sex because what I really want is to be loved and nurtured and cherished. But that's the only way I know how to get it. For some people, that's what codependence looks like. For some people, it looks like rescuing, what I call savior behavior.
Right.
And I know it because I did it.
Yes.
So that's freeing myself. So for me, bliss is freeing myself from the bonds of codependent relationships.
Fantastic. Thanks for going there. Thanks for answering that. We're talking with Edie Weinstein about having an orgasmic life. And first, we've been discussing how to know codependency and possibly free ourselves from that, and also how to discover one's own bliss. That's what Edie was discussing with me earlier. You're listening to Tantra Cafe. I'm Laurie Handler, your host. And coming up next, we're going to be discussing more aspects of living an orgasmic life and why somebody would want to and why somebody might not want to, so stay tuned. If you're wondering what book you should read to jumpstart your sex life and increase your happiness, try my book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy. This short, easy-to-read book will make you laugh at yourself and possibly even make you cry, as you discover my tantric secrets for sex and happiness and how they apply to you. In the book, I begin with the 10th law, make love in the unknown, and then work you all the way through laws 1 through 9 to teach you how to be in the unknown, fresh, every moment, every day. Sex and happiness puts the innocence and love back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. It's only $19.99 in paperback and $14.99 in ebook. You can get it by going to sexandhappiness.com to order your copy of Sex and Happiness by me, Laurie Handlers. Well, we're back on Tantra Cafe. I was talking with Edie Weinstein about orgasmic living and asking you whether you would like to live your life full out, allowing richness, juiciness, allowing yourself to burst like a ripe fruit into your glory. I asked earlier, too, if you were in a delicious place in your life. And so, Edie, I'm going to ask you some of these things. Are you somebody who want to live your life that way?
Yes. I think I've always wanted to, but had been afraid to before, again, because what would the propriety police think? And now I realize the propriety police were just a construct in my mind. They weren't real. They were, you know, and years ago, a friend of mine who liked my writing said, you know, you should have a column, like a Sex in the City column. And, you know, 'cause he'd seen some of my more, racy kind of writing. And I said, well, you know, there's Moishe and Selma Weinstein, octogenarians living in Fort Lauderdale, Florida that I want to keep alive. Those are my parents. And they would be shocked. So I think I'm going to wait. Well, my father has since passed and my mother is still living and I've talked to her about this. She knows some of what my life choices are, but not all of them, and she doesn't need to know. But she and I talk about these things now, and I think she kind of gets it vicariously. So she knows that I do live like this, and I do my morning check-in calls with her, and I tell her about the things I'm teaching. I think I told her that I'm going to be on your show, and you know, that I had taken a class with you, and, so first it's about permission. Giving right. yourself permission to live like this.
That's so good. I'm so glad you brought that back because you can't have satisfaction if you don't have permission.
Right. And I give myself permission to live in a way that pleases me. I talk about teaching people how to be in pleasure. I've stopped saying you're welcome when people say thank you. I always say my pleasure.
Right.
Because if I say it, I'm going to have it, I'm going to live it. And I'm not real comfortable with the term guilty pleasure. You know, people talk about that, you know, a certain TV show or a certain, you know, indulgence in a certain food is guilty pleasure. No more guilt. Mm-mm. Ain't happening here.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I just want to share with you that I have my octogenarian father living here with me in Phoenix now, mm-hmm. in Phoenix, Arizona, and, he's been through bliss.
Wow.
3 times. And actually, if you may have been to my website before, and if people want to go to my website, butterflyworkshops.com, there's a short film there, a 13-minute film called The Butterfly Experience, which is a film of that bliss course. And my father, I needed an extra actor. They weren't.
That's great.
They weren't really actors, you know, like they were people who were taking a course, for some of them for the first time and a few of them for the second time, who agreed to be in a film so I could cut a DVD of the course and give it out to people at the end. And I needed an extra person. I said to my father, well, you're it. So he's actually recorded.
That's so funny. That's great.
Yeah, you know,
that just reminded me of something, a story that my mother tells me. I was an inquisitive child, and I would never hesitate to ask any questions about any subject. And my mother would say that my younger sister never had to ask any questions because I always asked them first, and they usually took place at the dinner table. And they were usually, not usually, but some of the time about sex. So when I'd ask a question, my father would look at my mother, shrug his shoulders, and say, okay, Selma, you take this one. I don't know how to answer that one. So
perfect.
I think that's where it got started.
Yeah, perfect. Well, we have a lot in common. We really, really do. So let's go back, because I actually do believe that I'm living an orgasmic life. That was the biggest lesson that I got out of Tantra, that it was possible to be physically high frequency, like physically purring, I guess. I don't, like, stoked up. My fires are stoked up most of the time. Mm-hmm. So physically, that to me resembles orgasm. And then also to just be making love to everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Making love with things I don't like, making love with things I like, making, like, being in the dance of it that says, okay, I love it, even if it sucks. I must mm-hmm. love it because I created it, so here
yep.
it comes. So,
yep.
So before, earlier in the show, you mentioned that some people just don't want this.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about people who are uncomfortable with change, or I don't even want to, mm-hmm. that, you might not have said it like that. They were uncomfortable with pursuing this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us about that. Tell me a little bit more about why would people not want this?
Well, the analogy that I can use came a couple of days ago, and a dear friend was doing a presentation. He was talking about making positive change in our lives, and he was saying he had gone to, there was a time he worked at Madison Square Garden, and he went there backstage when the Ringling Brothers Circus was there, and he saw the elephants there, big elephants, baby elephants, and the big elephants had just a little rope around their ankle tied to a stake. He said, not that I support animals being tied up, but he said this is how they kept the elephants in place and from running away. It was just a little rope. And then he saw a baby elephant next to the big elephant. So he asked the trainer, you know, why does that big elephant stay there with just this tiny little rope attached to a stake that's only in a little bit of dirt? All it has to do is lift its leg and it gets, you know, can pull it out of the ground. And the man pointed to this baby elephant and said, we've got a rope around that elephant's leg too. And that elephant is too small and too weak to pull their leg out. And they start believing that they can't free themselves. So by the time they're an adult elephant, they don't know that all they have to do is lift their leg and move out of it because it's what they're used to. So I would say the same thing for us human beings. It's what we're used to. If you're used to operating, resonating at a certain frequency, you up the amps, it's going to fry your circuits. So, you know, that's the fear.
Yeah, the fear.
I have to tell you, when I had my first spontaneous Kundalini awakening in 2004, I had no clue what was going on. I had no preparation for it, and I felt like my circuits were fried. And I didn't run away from it. I stayed with the feeling. I talked to friends who had been through it. I had friends who were yoga teachers, and it took me about 6 months, but I got through it. And
well,
there's no turning back.
You have to tell us about it, of course, because I can't assume that everybody knows what that
right.
is. What the heck are you
okay.
talking?
Well, Kundalini.
Yeah. What happened to you?
Well, I took my first Tantra class with two very well-known teachers who had come into the area. They were my introduction to Tantra, and it was a wonderful class.
Are you talking about Charles and Caroline?
Yes, yes.
I think that's how you and I met.
Charles and
Caroline came to... You didn't speak there, but I called you or something. I called you about your article.
Yes. So they were my first Tantra teachers, and I had, you know, after taking their intro class, I had my first spontaneous Kundalini awakening. Kundalini is, I guess it's a Sanskrit term, I believe, that refers to... I don't know if it's considered a literal, and you would know this better than I would, coiled snake at the base of the spine that
yeah.
moves up the chakras. And
yes, it's basically a female. It's a female snake. It's Shakti energy coming from the
mm-hmm.
earth, and it moves up the chakras like a snake, like the
right.
caduceus, the caduceus
right. the medical,
from
right.
medicine, which have the two
yeah.
snakes.
Right. So it the energy was so powerful. Was so overwhelming that I felt like all of the chakras were blown wide open. The only image that could come to mind afterwards when I was explaining it to somebody is, you know, those windows or window blinds that you can open partway or close, you know, that you can modulate the light coming through. in that experience, they were wide open and I couldn't shut them. So I was hypersensitive to everything, emotionally, physically. I couldn't sleep a straight night through for 6 months. And I would sit up in bed at night holding my head and rocking. And I thought, my God, is this what some of my patients in the hospital where I work who have psychosis go through? That's what it felt like. It felt like a psychotic. I mean, I could function. I went to work every day. I drove. I did normal people stuff. But that fear or potential fear of that happening is enough to keep people in their safe little cocoons.
Mm. Did your body vibrate at that time?
Yeah. It was like, the way I described it was like 1,000 volts of electricity going through my arms. And again, I wasn't in any danger, but it was such an unaccustomed physiological state that I wish I had known it was going to happen. Not that anybody was negligent, not that it was anything like that, but I wish I had known what could happen. So I could have gone into it a little more gradually, because that's not my style. I dive into things head first.
Right.
And I wish I had eased my way into the experience. So I do more easing now than diving.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned this, the way you set it up. It's good. It's great because there's an opportunity here to, first of all, take a look at the fact that people have pretty much disowned their body and they don't know much about their energy.
Yeah.
Forget about sexual energy. I mean, they know about sex and they kind of know most people are drawn to the deliciousness of it, of the feeling of it, but there's this whole other aspect of just working the sexual energy, which your story hits upon, and most people don't even know the capability. So it seems to me that if we were taught in a different way altogether in our world about our bodies, this awakening experience, this Kundalini awakening experience that you had, you'd just go into it. It would be like encouraging it, breathing faster, going into that, you know, not trying to shut the curtains. If you had known, if you had been properly contextually set up for it, it probably could have changed your experience.
Yeah, I mean, I had no frame of reference. I'd heard the term before. I had just started practicing yoga at the time. I'd been practicing meditation, 15, 20 years at that point, but I'd never had anything quite like that. And I don't regret it. It set the tone for the life that I'm living now. And the emotional, I call myself an emotional bungee jumper. I've never physically, nor do I ever want to physically bungee jump or skydive, but I do it emotionally. And
that's great. You're a bliss mistress, bungee, emotional bungee jumper.
Well, that's where, you know, the Ladihan concept comes in, is, you know, being in that unknown, doing what I call an ST plunge, you know, falling backwards into life, into the arms of God, Goddess, all it is, living in the mystery. That's where the juice is, you know, and,
sure,
and okay, what's,
sure,
what's going to happen next? Ooh, you know.
Well, in case you've just tuned in, you're listening to Tantra Cafe. I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and my guest today is Edie Weinstein, and we're just having a delicious conversation about all the possibilities that can happen when you wake up. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what she just mentioned, which is called Ladihan, going into the unknown, and bring it all back to the orgasmic life. And we've discussed people who don't want it. Now we're going to talk about people who do want it, meaning her and I, and hopefully you. Hopefully you'll join us. So we'll be right back. If you're listening to Tantra Cafe, congratulations. You've reached a higher plane of consciousness in caring for yourself and caring for your significant other. Tantra can help with physical and emotional bonding to nurture your relationship. And there's another level of care that you should be considering as well. It's your family's financial well-being. I rely on DeLone Financial Services to guide me on this journey. And Jeff DeLone is my friend. He and I have worked together for years. He even helps care for my father's finances. For information about your family's financial planning, contact Jeff DeLone at 610-356-1253. That's 610-356-1253. Or you can email Jeff at jdelone@delonefinancialgroup.com.
Securities and investment advisory services are offered through FSC Securities Corporation, member FINRA SIPC. Jeff DeLone is a registered representative with FSC Securities Corporation. DeLone Financial Group is not.
We're back with Tantra Cafe. I'm Laurie Handler as your host, and my guest today is Edie Weinstein. And Edie Weinstein calls herself a bliss mistress, and she is speaking today with us about having an orgasmic life. So, Edie, let's talk about why people would want it. I mean, I got that you wanted to break through your limitations, and I certainly, you didn't want any more of those, what was it, propriety?
Oh, the propriety, worried that the propriety police were looking over my shoulder to see what I was up to.
Right. So, So I could see how you would move towards getting free of that. I could really see that. And why would people want to have an orgasmic life? Why would they, what would attract them? What are the benefits?
Okay. Well, first of all, it's living in Technicolor. Probably most people who are listening to the show have seen The Wizard of Oz at least once. And I liken it to the transition between Dorothy being in, you know, black and white Kansas to being in Technicolor Oz. And a lot of us live black and white lives because we think, number one, that's all we're allowed to live. That's all we've ever lived. That's all we ever think is going to be there. And the benefit, imagine if you could all of a sudden see in living color, if everything dripped with color, what would that feel like in your life? You would feel fully alive. Relationships improve. If you're relating to another Technicolor person as a Technicolor person, you're going to have much more fun. If you're feeling, giving yourself permission to be fully expressed verbally, physically, you're going to have much more fun. Now, when I say fully expressed, it doesn't mean not having any filters and saying whatever you want and the heck with what anybody thinks. You know, compassion and tact and all that stuff is important, too, you know, to have a healthy relationship with somebody. It's experiencing more pleasure in your body. I talk about the idea of pleasure being experienced from three perspectives. The first one is in anticipation. You know, you think about something coming up that you're really excited about, and you can feel that adrenaline pumping, the blood, butterflies in your stomach, your whole body saying, yes, yes, this is what I want. And I encourage people to breathe into that. And the second part is the experience itself. When you're totally present to what's going on in your life, whether you're washing dishes, washing the car, taking the dog for a walk, or, you know, being in a passionate embrace, when you're in the moment, you're going to enjoy it a whole lot more. And you can only focus on one thing at a time consciously. You can't handle more than one, even those of us that are consummate multitaskers. And I include myself in that group, and you probably are too, Lori, doing everything you do.
Oh, yeah.
But you can only totally do one thing at a time.
And yeah. Growing all the time, you know, growing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that's part two, is the here and now experience. And then we experience pleasure in our memories because our bodies have sense memory. We remember stuff physically, whether it's abuse or whether it's pleasure. Our bodies remember that stuff. So that's one of the benefits, is being able to have portable pleasure. It doesn't come from somebody else. Okay? Nobody gives you an orgasm. It's something that's generated in your psyche, your body, your consciousness that you can share with another person or people, but nobody gives it to you. Nobody's responsible for your sexual pleasure or any pleasure but you. And that's a revolutionary concept for, I would say, women more than men. I can't speak for men, obviously, but, you know, we're taught that, you know, we are at the effect of our lovers, and
right.
We're not. You know, it's our
equipment. It's funny that you're saying, I just have to say, it's funny, you're like, in a certain way, you're plugging my book. Because
I like your book. I read your book.
My second
I don't
chapter
know where the
is,
came from, but
is please your, my second chapter is Please Yourself.
Yeah, oh,
and
yeah.
Then I go into that whole rant about how women don't know what they want and men are always trying to please them, and men, it's not men's job to please women,
right.
And
they
should stop, and women aren't going to like what I'm going to say, but I'm saying it anyway. So I love what you're saying. I certainly am in full agreement with you about this.
Oh, Absolutely, that we are responsible for our own pleasure, and when we know what we want, we can tell partners what we want. You know, whether our partner is a man or a woman, because another woman may know the equipment better because she has it herself, but we're all unique individuals. You know, I may not know what another person wants or what they enjoy in me. So you can't get what you want until you know what you want, and you can't tell anybody else what you want until you know what you want.
That's really good. So that would that be a tip? Like your tip?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Get to know your body. Get to know what lights you up from the inside. And again, this is not just about sex. It's about everything that you want. I talk about attuning your body to the key of O when you live an orgasmic life.
Beautiful. Would you tell people to make a list?
Would you absolutely.
Encourage them to make a list of what turns them on in every way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, what I talk about, and I wrote an article about this that I sent to you, I say it could be dancing, wearing clothing that floats over your body, could be getting or giving a massage. I'm committed. For the last several months, I've scheduled a monthly massage. I have a wonderful friend, my friend Cindy, who's an amazing massage therapist, and my session with her is tomorrow night. So that's a gift I give to myself every month. And I'm a massage practitioner, so I make sure that I get massage. For some people, it's watching sunlight coming through, through the trees. It could be the aroma of fresh baked cookies. So make a list of what turns you on. And again, it's not just sexual turn-ons. I encourage people to ask for what they want. And I talk about in the article, my son, who's now 22, when he was a child and we would ask him to choose between two different flavors of ice cream, he would reply, "I want both of each." So, imagine that concept, both of each. You don't have to limit yourself. I only get to have this pleasure. Only one pleasure per day. You can't have more than that. That's what we tell ourselves. Or not at all. There's something wrong with wanting pleasure in our minds.
That's a great little story about your son, because people really do feel like when they get something that there's too much attention on them, and then they have to turn around and give right back, and they're not allowed to have more. They're not expanded in having as much pleasure as they could possibly devour, or as much pleasure as they possibly could receive.
Right. And that's not selfish. There's nothing selfish at all about receiving, because there can be no giver if there is no receiver. So I encourage people to be both generous givers and gracious receivers. And everything I'm telling you here is what I live myself, and I sometimes struggle with myself.
So if you were struggling, how would it? I mean, just because it's good to have you sound somewhat normal. I don't want to encourage you to be normal. I don't encourage anyone to be normal. But, when everyone has a not so great day, everybody has a contraction somehow or other. So when you really need to encourage yourself, when you're having a not so orgasmic day, what's that like?
Well, a couple things I tell people when you mention normal, I say that normal is a setting on a washing machine. That's it. There is no such thing as normal. I didn't make that one up, but I like that one. And what I tell people is that when I have the inevitable dark night of the soul, and again, we all have that, I know the sun will come out tomorrow, and I joke that I channel my inner Annie. The sun will come out tomorrow. Yeah. I know it will, because it always does. And I get through the dark night of the soul by knowing that I walk into a room, and if the electric bill has been paid, I switch on the switch, the light's going to go on. Okay, I know, I don't just believe these things, I know them. I have, I doubt once in a while, but in God, Goddess, and I would ever have this dialogue where, the question is, have I ever dropped you? Have things ever not worked out even more gloriously than you imagined? And the answer is always no, of course not. They always do work out, so that helps me. Is that I have a dialogue or monologue, depending on whether I feel connected or part of God, with a dialogue with the divine. And I do it every day, several times a day, when I'm wavering. I said, all right, give me a reality check here. What's going on? And that helps get me through. I surround myself with supportive people, people that nourish my dreams. That gets me through. I'm hard on myself at times. I've had friends that have told me that I'm extremely hard on myself. So I've learned to give myself permission to be fully human. That's been hard. When you talked about the idea of not being able to accept pleasure, I remember an experience I had a number of years ago. I was walking this beautiful labyrinth in an area not too far from where I live, and I remember thinking, you know, I want to bring someone into my heart, and the voice in my head said, how can your heart be a safe place for someone else when it's not even a safe place for you? And boy, did I dissolve into tears at that one. I still do when I think about it, I tear up. That in order for us, our hearts to be safe for other people to enter, whether they're lovers or friends, it needs to be a safe place for us.
Yes. You know, it's absolutely true. But sometimes we don't find that out until mm-hmm. we've been through many debacles it wasn't safe for us in a relationship, or it wasn't mm-hmm. safe for us. And it turns out that it was a reflection. We weren't safe at that time. I've seen you go through a safety process actually with me, and I mm-hmm. saw you actually turn on some huge floodlights to yourself to get safe right before your own eyes and right before my eyes and other people.
And it's exciting. It's like, wow, look what just happened here.
I'm safe.
Well, it is a transformation, and the receptivity is kind of interesting. I'm 51 this year. I'll be 52 in October. But when I had my 50th birthday party, a wonderful friend hosted a party for me. It wasn't a surprise party, but the people that showed up, some of them were surprised, and they did this ritual for me where they shared out loud the impact I had on their lives. Now, I wish I had recorded it, because I don't remember even a fraction of what was said because I deflected it. You know, I was like a Teflon pan rather than a love sponge, you know, soaking it up, because it was so hard to hear. Why, you know, and this is a question that I still don't know the answer to, maybe you do, why is it so much easier to believe all the negative propaganda that we have in our heads about ourselves than to believe the love that we really are? When I can answer that one, I'll be a gazillionaire, I think.
Well, it really is. It's part of our culture. It's a lot part of our culture, and I mean the human condition. It's it has to do with the duality between body and mind.
Mm-hmm.
That we value the mind more than we value the body. That the body is the vehicle where the soul lives, but the vehicle is not as valuable as the soul and spirit. It really has to do with the duality. So the negative, that rejection stuff, and the translation into deflection of compliments is really because it's been passed to us genetically. It's in our DNA now. It's not just the socialization process. It's years and years and years and years of people being puppets for mm-hmm. the powers that be, or the influences that want to get ahead. So it registers more deeply, especially in the sex chakra. It registers more deeply all the negative stuff, and then when something mirrors that, or something the opposite of that, like wanting to give you adoration, you're like, me?
Right.
Little, small, undeserving me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I have it too, so it's not that I'm devoid of that. I have that also. I work really, I will give you a tip for that, by the way.
Sure.
Since it happened to you recently. And you can't do it, you know, you can't go back and relive your birthday party, but when somebody gives you a great compliment like that and you notice you're deflecting, you could say, just a minute, I really want to hear that, and I'm
right.
going to breathe as I request that you say it again.
Yeah.
And there you can have it. Where I'm talking today with Edie Weinstein about really great stuff, like how to have an orgasmic life, how to really take in the pleasure and beauty and magnitude that life is, everything all around us, and let it into ourselves, not just look at it like something out there. It's quite a conversation that we're having, and we're on Tantra Cafe, which is a program for spiritual enlightenment. I'm your host, Laurie Handlers. And we're going to come back and talk about some other tips that Edie may have for us about how to really be fully expressed, and also find out a little bit more about what she offers and how to get in touch with her. So please stay tuned to Tantra Cafe. Many times on Tantra Cafe, you've heard my guests and me discuss emotional release techniques. Now you can do emotional release in the privacy of your own home. In my CD, Shamanic Release in Lati Han, I create a very safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work I'm known for in my Tantra courses. I set you up with the proper positioning and breathing, and then guide you through each emotional state to the beat of tribal African rhythms. If you try the CD, you'll find an easy way to do your personal clearing work on a regular basis, and you'll watch your relationships walk free from emotional baggage. You can order my CD at butterflyworkshops.com for only $20. Aren't you really worth it? I think you are. Go to butterflyworkshops.com and get your copy now. Shamanic Release in Lati Han. Walk free from emotional baggage. Well, we're back for our final segment of Tantra Cafe. I'm with Edie Weinstein, and I realize that we mentioned Lati Han in an earlier segment, and we never came back to it, and now I just talked about it in my plug for my own CD. So I think we ought to say a couple words about being in the unknown. Do you think?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Why don't you?
Well, being in the unknown. In addition to that Lati Han concept, I think about this term that I first heard a number of years ago connected with Gilda Radner. Do you remember Gilda from Saturday Night Live?
Absolutely, she was my favorite character.
Gilda Radner died of ovarian cancer in 1989. And
right.
Before she died, her counselor, let me back up a little bit. She had written a book called It's Always Something, and it was made into a TV movie. My favorite scene at the end is she's with her counselor, Joanna Bull, and she's sitting on the floor. Joanna's holding her, and she's fairly close to dying. She's got a little fuzzy, chemotherapy hair growing back and looking very thin, and she gets up and storms away, and Joanna says to her, I know why this cancer makes you so angry, because there's so much uncertainty. You don't have any control. But she said, imagine this. When you're not in control, you get to live in the delicious ambiguity where anything is possible. Now, that's paraphrasing it. But I like the term delicious ambiguity. We're taught to think, oh, my God, anything's possible. But I prefer to say, wow, anything's possible. What would it be like if I lived every day with anything's possible? So that, to me, is the essence of Lati Han, is within that just don't know, within that mystery, anything could happen, and frequently does.
So true. So true, and it often does, because we really have very little control over any of it. But we kid ourselves into thinking. I like that thing, the way I describe Lati Han is, it's that there was a commercial on TV where a guy walked out of his house, he kisses his wife goodbye, walks out the door, puts on a helmet, and then he kind of dives off of a cliff and comes down with a parachute, in front of, to a new SUV or something.
Ooh.
But to me, when I saw that commercial on TV, I went, they stole that from me.
Oh.
Because I really tell people to imagine going off of a cliff into the unknown, into the void, and find themselves a magic carpet to brace the fall, and then go into the complete unknown. The known is known already. So what? It's boring. Go into something new at every moment with every breath and see what's possible, as you said, like all the possibilities.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and a lot of people think about things being impossible, but I prefer to change the punctuation mark to say I'm possible. And in any moment, I'm infinite possibility.
Oh, I like that. Can I steal that?
I get to recreate myself brand new every day.
Can I steal that from you? I'm possible?
Yeah, Laura, I believe there are no original ideas. It's all part of the collective consciousness. Is that, the Carl Jung concept, collective unconscious. That's what it is.
when you just said that, I got reminded of something. This will bring us back to something we discussed earlier, which was your first Tantra workshop with Charles and Caroline Muir, when I took a workshop with Charles Muir, in my experience of the homework that night, I was having an amazing real orgasm experience, and instead, and I was saying, oh my God. And I changed it in the moment to say, Om, I'm God.
Oh, I like that.
I'm God. So that transformed my entire sexual experience.
Oh, I like that. Can I swipe that one? I forget who it was that said something like, you know, I only steal from the best, or I only borrow from the best, or whatever, you know. But we're all so intricately and intimately connected that we're, you know, reading each other's minds anyway, you know. So, I like that concept. The other thing that I encourage people to do is to realize that like attracts like. You know, we're taught that opposites attract. But when we're shining, we attract shining people. You know, everybody, I think, is a mirror for us. So what I'm putting out is what I'm getting back.
So if you're putting out a lot of pleasure and a lot of self-acceptance mm-hmm. and a lot of mm-hmm. orgasmic content, like the high vibration,
mm-hmm.
chances yeah. are what you're saying, the people that you're attracting to yourself are going to be vibrating at that level as well. Mm-hmm. What a wonderful way to move through time and space.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, not everybody, you know, if we live that way, we're not always just going to attract. There's no absolute. You know, there's no always or never anything. It's been my experience. But there have been times when I've drawn people into my life who are attracted to that energy and are, you know, they've heard the term emotional vampires. They just kind of suck the life out of you. And that's where boundaries come in. That's where, you know, the 6 years in Codependence Anonymous comes in handy for me, is to be able to say, I set boundaries that I'm only willing to allow certain experiences and energies and people into my life. You know, it's not being exclusive. It's not being a snob. It's not being, you know, saying I know better or I'm superior. It just means, and again, you mentioned cuddle party. That's one of the things a cuddle party teaches too, is appropriate boundaries. This is what I'm comfortable with. This is what I'm not comfortable with. This is what I accept in my life. This is what I'm not willing to accept any longer. So that's part of it too for me, is, you know, is saying this is what works, this doesn't work. And I express it, you know, tactfully. I don't tell people to go take a hike. But I'm learning to say no to things that don't feel right. You know, trusting my instincts, my gut.
That's perfect. It adds more to your life. It's added more to my life to do that kind of thing, to set boundaries and say no where appropriate than to walk around angry because I violated myself with the use of mm-hmm. someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those yeah. energy vampires are around all over the place and they're mm-hmm. looking for somebody's neck. I always say they're looking for my neck. They're looking for my neck. They want to chomp my neck and walk away. We once did my former partner and I once did a workshop, a 9-day healing fair in London. Mm-hmm. And it was 9 whole days of people who wanted to get healed coming mm-hmm. through the booths, you know, all the different booths. And at the end of 9 days, I had no blood left.
Oh.
You know? So many people who are energy vampires, you know. Yeah. So it's perfect that you're doing this, that you're talking about this boundary setting. Now tell people how they can find out more about Cuddle Party because
okay,
yeah, because we didn't really go into it and we're not gonna, but I want people to be able
to find it. Okay, but just so people know, Cuddle Party is a workshop, 3.5-hour workshop. You can go to the website www.cuddleparty.com, and it will tell you about all things cuddly. My website is liveinjoy.org. And there are, you know, links to all kinds of stuff that I do. And I'm, as you mentioned, you know, writer, speaker, and interfaith minister, a PR. I call myself a PR goddess. I help with PR and marketing for events and promotions. And I'm writing a book, which I didn't even mention, called The Bliss Mistress Guide to Transforming the Ordinary into the Extraordinary. So this is kind of a primer, you know, a little bit of a teaser for the book, to be able to talk about what it would be like to live a bliss-filled life.
Well, when you come, when the book is out, when do you expect the book to be out?
When do I expect it to be out? Well, the same friend that told the elephant story is a writer also, and he's a kind of a kick-ass coach. He says, you know, the book's not doing anybody any good being in your head. When are you going to finish it? So I started
telling
him,
when are you going to finish it already?
He says, no, finish it. So my commitment, what is this? This February. By the end of this year, I'm committed to having it published, however it needs to get published. And I need to get past the I'm not good enough, the imposter syndrome, you know, who's going to want to read this kind of thing to be able to do it.
Been there. I know it.
Yeah. But you got books out there, so you got through it. You survived.
I got through it. You got to just get through it. You hold your own hand and get out. You know, get out into it. Walk right through it. You really can do it. So I really want to thank you. I really want to thank you, Edie, for being my guest today and talking to us about having an orgasmic life. You really have talked about how to make the ordinary into the extraordinary. The benefits of giving yourself the pleasure that you want, that you deserve it, even when you feel you don't deserve it, and how to get out of that, how to break through that and go for it. And I'm very grateful that you've come on the show and shared this with me.
Oh, my pleasure.
Using what you just gave us, that tip you gave us before.
I practice what I preach.
Wonderful. So thank you so much. I've been talking with Edie Weinstein. And you can go to her website at liveinjoy.org. That's liveinjoy.org. We'll be watching for your book. We'll be waiting for it to come out. You'll have to come back up on the show when you put it out there. You can reach me anytime by going to laurie@butterflyworkshops.com. You can send me an email about suggestions for the show, feedback for the show. You can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. And please don't forget to order your copy of my book, Sex and Happiness. I'm going to be saying namaste from Tantra Cafe. That means I bow to the divine in you. Stay tuned next week when my guest is Hercules, the pleasure coach. We'll be talking more about pleasure. See you then.